Christopher Nolan, back at it again with a new episode of the Boy Time Podcast, and as always, I'm joined by Babby. We have a slam dunk episode, as always. Not super eventful. I guess we can officially usher in the end of award season, which is good. I feel like we've been talking about the same 5 movies for the last 3 months. And now we can put all of it to rest because pretty much everything went exactly the way that you would expect it. So there you go. I guess we can briefly talk about the Oscars. I think I'm more interested in like the everything surrounding it other than like the actual awards. Because I was very happy that Davine Joy Randolph won for The Holdovers, because she is great in that movie, and I thought that her acceptance speech was very touching and nice. So, but that was pretty much all I cared about the awards. I didn't see Oppenheimer because I am boycotting Christopher Nolan until he starts being right about movie consumption, because right now he is dead wrong, which we don't necessarily have to get into, but I think that his attitudes about IMAX and theater are not entirely correct. Yes, it is the ideal way to see things, but for a lot of people it is unattainable, whether it is because they don't live in a place that has an IMAX theater, or, you know, maybe it's not so much a money thing, maybe it's a time thing, you know, to go and see Oppenheimer, that's obviously not something you'd want to bring your kids to, so that requires you to get a sitter, or, you know, maybe have your parents watch them, and then, so that's like a time commitment, and then what if you don't like it, then it feels like it's a sunk cost, and, you know, it's just going to leave you worse off than you were before. It's way, way better if you can just watch it once the kids are asleep. And I think that would be a much better experience. But according to him, you haven't seen his movie if you see it that way. So not a big fan of him. So I kind of boycotted this one for that reason. And it won a bunch of stuff. Which is fine. Probably deserved. I'm sure it's a good movie with a great message. You know, nuclear war is bad. I was just hoping for applause or something for saying something so brave. You know.
That's what John Cena should have done.
That is what
John naked with that on the side.
You know, that was like the best part. That and John Mulaney. I think he was.
I agree.
Introduced.
I saw.
Yeah, I like that. I also saw the I'm Just Ken performance, which was good. I liked it. Ryan Gosling has a lot of charisma, and I liked when he handed the mic off to Emma Stone. For all of us La La Land fans,
little Easter egg.
It's a little Easter egg, I guess. I don't think it was planned though, because she seemed completely caught off guard. Similarly to when she found out that she won for best actor and actress in a leading role. I saw a lot of people upset about that. I agree, because if anything, the Oscars really should be very... they should be aware of their reputation towards Native Americans. And maybe...
Or literally anybody else.
Yeah, but I'm talking, like, especially Native Americans with what happened with Marlon Brando and that whole situation in the late 70s. So I feel like... And they even, like, I think... I forget her name. The one that went up and accepted the award for Brando. She, like, just died last year, and the Oscars released a statement. It was like, oh... Rest in peace to this brave icon. And it's like, y'all dragged her and Brando's name through the mud for doing that. for being 100% correct. So
like the FBI is celebrating MLK Day.
Pretty much. I mean, not to that extreme, but yeah.
Same kind of vibe.
Too. Same vibe. You know, the Oscars didn't kill her. Not that we know.
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe. I doubt it. Because she lived for 50 years after the fact.
For her.
Good for her. But yeah, I think it was kind of weird. You can definitely tell that Emma Stone thought that Lily Gladstone was going to get it for Killers of the Flower Moon. She won everything else, like the Golden Globes and the SAG Awards, like all those. But for some reason, Emma Stone won for Poor Things. I think she was surprised, and I would be too. Especially because, you know, there's that famous clip of the Golden Globes after Lily Gladstone won. And, like, Emma Stone seems, like, really happy that she won. And, like, oh, that's kind of cool. I like that. But, yeah, I will say that Emma Stone's performance is really good in Poor Things. She's basically doing, like, three different characters over the course of the movie, which is impressive. But, I just think that this was probably Lily Gladstone's year to win it. just given the climate. So, yeah, weird pick, but fine, ultimately, I guess. I think Lily Gladstone's already been cast in some other big movies, so hopefully she gets nominated again and wins. Because I don't know if we have had a Native American win an acting Oscar. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not super versed in Oscar history, but
you were, I'd be disappointed.
Yeah, I don't know a lot. The like big things I know, and I know what won Best Picture the year I was born, because I feel like that's, I don't know, just something to know, which is the same year you were born.
Correct.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to say the year. I don't know if we want to date ourselves or say the
1726.
I have to be real. It was Godfather 2. We were born in 1980 or something. 1987. that's how old we are. But yeah, other than that, I don't really care. I did see Shameik Moore is dumb. He continues to be the thing that's kind of bringing these Spider-Verse movies down. Not that he's giving a bad performance. I think he's actually great as Miles. But just everything surrounding him as a person is just kind of bad. Because Spider-Verse did not win for Best Animated Picture. That went to The Boy and the Heron. And I think there was two responses that were the way to go, because I think Christopher Miller said, hey, if you're going to lose to anybody, it might as well be the GOAT, when referring to Miyazaki. That's the right way to do it, I think. You gotta give a tip of the cap to the master himself. But Shameik Moore just tweeted, robbed. Like, no, that's that's not a good look. I mean, Across the Spider-Verse is great, but I mean, come on. Miyazaki is
not just, even a full movie. It's part one.
That's true. It's just a part one.
Maybe you should have made a full movie.
Yeah. Who even knows when that's going to come out? I feel like it keeps getting pushed back.
They got them in the sweatshops rolling.
Yeah. For real. And I've heard that is not letting up. Even though everything has come out, it seems that working conditions have not improved under Sony Pictures Animation, which is unfortunate. But, I mean, I don't know. I just like, Shameik Moore, you just need to be quiet. Stop tweeting. you don't want to say that Hayao Miyazaki is overrated, because He's one of the best directors alive today, in my humble opinion, and probably a bunch of others. So, I don't know. I think that's pretty much it in terms of stuff that happened. Oppenheimer won. Already said that. I think it's Nolan's first. He won for directing and best picture. Yeah, this is his first Oscar, which is funny because Scorsese was nominated and lost again. I think this is like maybe, I think I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying this is like his 15th time being nominated and not winning, which just
sucks.
It's kind of weird, you know, like Scorsese has like this reputation of being like one of the goats. But for some reason, the Academy just does not like him at all. I don't get it. Especially this movie. It feels like this movie is, like, important enough to, like, warrant a directing. I mean, Lily Gladstone's great in it. Leo's great in it. De Niro is also pretty good. As much as a late era De Niro can be. So, I don't know. I feel like he probably deserved it, but I've also heard that the performances in Oppenheimer are great. I mean, Cillian Murphy and Robert Downey Jr. both won, so I guess. But I don't know. I'm glad we don't have to talk about Oppenheimer or Killers of the Flower Moon or what are the other big ones? Is The Holdovers big Barbie. Enough? Barbie. Yeah, we don't have to talk about those ever again.
Yippee.
Yeah, which is good. You know, I don't need to keep talking about these movies. So, just move on, because we have some good stuff coming out this year. Not that I've seen any of them, although I did go and see The Holdovers again in theaters. Because I went home this last weekend, and they were playing it in the theater, and I'm like, hey, Mom, we should watch this because you haven't seen it yet, and it's my favorite movie. And so we watched it, and it was great. But I've not seen anything new. But I think that'll transition us into what I did watch this week, which there is a very interesting theme for what I watched, and it is fishing related. So I know that you're going to be interested because you are a master angler.
True.
Some have said that you have easily pulled in like multiple 50-pound bass, and
that's on a bad day.
Well, the question I have to ask you is: have you ever had sexual relations with any of the fish that you have ever pulled in?
I feel like I can't answer that question legally.
Okay, well, I'll just let that breathe then, because I watched two movies where people fucked fish.
Let's go.
I agree. Except one of them sucked, and one of them was pretty good. Not fantastic, not phenomenal, but pretty good. We'll start out with the first one I watched, and that is Splash.
Perfect name.
Yeah. This is, I believe it's Tom Hanks' first movie. He was in the hit television program Bosom Buddies, where I believe the premise of that show is that Tom Hanks and one other dude get an apartment that is all girls, because I guess that was a thing that used to happen in the 70s or 60s or whatever. So every time they leave or enter their place, they essentially have to be in drag. And so thus the term, they're Bosom Buddies, because they have to dress like women, because I don't know, this is a weird premise for a show, but it's Tom Hanks' big break. So I guess Ron Howard saw that show and was like, hey, this guy, you know what, I'm gonna make a movie where he fucks a mermaid. And that's the movie. It's Splash. Yeah, it's interesting, you know. Tom Hanks and oh frick, why can't I think of her name? I should be able to think of her name. The mermaid. It is Daryl Hannah, who I know because she is the one-eyed assassin in Kill Bill. I think her name is Copperhead. I don't know. They all have snake names. She's the one that gets her eye yanked out and then stepped on, and there's a really gross scene where it, the ooze comes out, and I hate it. But it also had John Candy in it, the legend, the man, one of the greatest comedic actors of all time. Also had Eugene Levy, who is most known for Gooby.
Gooby.
he played the guy who wants to take a picture of Gooby. Don't know why he was in that movie.
You didn't watch Gooby again.
You do?
I need to.
It was pretty good. Yeah, it's Eugene Levy is in it, and then the guy who plays Hagrid is the guy who plays Gooby. It's like, why are you in this? Because that was like after the Harry Potter movies were coming out. Why are you playing Goofy? You're in Harry Potter. But I guess he needed that
bad Gooby agent.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Maybe he was just like, this is a script I believe in.
It's gonna go big.
It's gonna go big.
Gooby's gonna be a household name.
It's gonna be even bigger than Harry Potter, trust me. So, it's an all-star cast in Splash. I guess that's the moral of the story. But yeah, it's Tom Hanks, and he's a businessman. He runs a fruit business with his brother John Candy. I don't know, this is like such a random job. It's like owner of like a fruit distributor. It's like, it's very niche. I don't know why that was the choice, but he owns this fruit company, and one of his employees is getting married. And the day before, his like longtime girlfriend, I guess, moves out and dumps him because Tom Hanks, he has commitment issues. He can't say he loves her. I don't understand, but you know, they break up. And so Tom Hanks, you know, whenever he's angry, he drives to Cape Cod with, I don't know why. That does not seem like a relaxing place, but he goes to Cape Cod and just stares out in the water, and he's like, I need to go to the island. So he gets on a boat, and the boat breaks down, and he can't swim, so he's like about to drown. And then a mermaid saves him. And then, long story short, the mermaid follows him back to New York City, and then 3 days of tantric sex and literally fish out of water shenanigans ensue. Oh. Very funny. I'm sure no one has made that joke before. Where it's like, oh, she's a mermaid. She doesn't know how humans work. She doesn't know television. She doesn't know how ice skating is.
2000s, like, commercial preview.
Yeah, but this was in the 80s. This is early 80s. I think this is Ron Howard's first movie, too.
So it feels more like an early 2000s concept than an 80s concept.
It does. This is like Elf core, I guess you could say. It's just fish out of water. But yeah, they have a budding relationship, and John Candy is like, you love this girl, you should just say that you love her. And he's like, I don't know, something's weird, John Candy, I just can't put my finger on it, she just acts all strange. And then Eugene Levy is this evil scientist man who's trying to expose the mermaid for being a mermaid, for his science reasons. And he gets her wet one day. Not that way, get your head out of the gutter. He gets her wet because he sprays a hose at her and exposes her as a mermaid. And so then the government, you know, takes her. And then they're like, we need to get to the bottom of this mermaid secret. Which, can I just say, both of these movies involve these fish creatures being examined by the government. And in the second one, it's more clear. But in this one, why would the government experiment on a mermaid? What possible, like, use could a mermaid have? They just swim around. In this universe, they don't have any...
Trying to extract a profit incentive.
I guess.
There's got to be a way.
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Because, like, they don't... In this universe, like, They don't have any healing properties. They don't like sing to lure in sailors. They aren't like sirens or anything like that. They just like swim around. And it's like, we have those. They're called fish and they aren't half human. So like, why do we need mermaids? Especially because like once mermaids are on land, then their tails go away, which I guess is mermaid canon that I was not aware of. Like, that kind of defeats the whole purpose of the Little Mermaid. If she could just go on land the whole time.
Mystery solved.
Yeah. All I'm saying is that whoever's in charge of the mermaid law, get your stuff together and then make a movie, because none of them are consistent. So it's just very confusing for the average moviegoer like myself, where it's like, well, okay, Ariel had to sell her soul to like an underwater drag queen so that she could have legs, but Daryl Hannah in this movie can just walk on land and be fine. Well, except she is naked, which I guess is, you know,
the whole draw of the movie.
That's true. Well, not really. Although, yeah, this is weird. It's rated PG and there's a lot of tits in it. A lot of
classic 80s.
Yeah, I was just like, this is kind of surprising, you know? But I guess this was pre-Little Mermaid, so I guess if everybody's idea of mermaids were just topless women that had fish bodies, then I guess that's the lore. It's
artsy.
It's not. It's this really shitty this shitty 80s rom-com where Tom Hanks fucks a fish. But the fish does have legs when they're on land, so I guess it is fine. But yeah, she gets taken away by the government, and then shenanigans ensue. They're on the dock and they're like, okay, you're free now, mermaid. Go to sea right before the military gets you, because they're right on our tails, because of course they are. It's this kind of movie. Of course the cops are right on their tail. You know, metaphorical tail, because she's not in the water yet. And so then the mermaid's like, hey, Tom Hanks, you should swim in the water with me because I can make you breathe underwater. Tom Hanks is like, sick. Can I bring John Candy along? And she's like, no. In fact, you can never go back on land again. And he's like, oh, shit. Well, that's fine. I'd rather be with the mermaid rather than be with John Candy. Even though, if they have to stay underwater the whole time, then she's gonna have her mermaid fin, and therefore, no reproductive organs, so they cannot have tantric underwater sex, like I think Tom Hanks was imagining. But they just jump in the water, and then credits roll as they're swimming around in, like, a coral reef, which I guess, in the universe of this movie, the Hudson Bay just has a lush coral reef right under it. You know, it isn't polluted and toxic. You can just swim and be fine. Just live there. Swim around with all the fish that are definitely in the Hudson Bay. And that splash, it sucks. But it is kind of funny because John Candy is in it and he has some shenanigans. Like, for some reason, he does this thing where he drops change right next to a bunch of ladies wearing dresses, and then he can kind of peep up and look at their undies, which is charming and not harassment. But it was the 80s.
It's the 80s.
You know, harassment is, it's fine. It doesn't even exist, actually. What are you, some sort of coward? Just take it like a man or a woman.
Woke wasn't even invented yet.
That's true. That's true. That's why the Oscars were not invented. Because that's what Elon Musk said, is that if you win an Oscar, you win the Woke Award. And then when Oppenheimer won, he said, never mind.
The Woke Award.
Which, can I just say, why is Oppenheimer being heralded as like this right-wing movie? This is like all Quiet on the Western Front again. I think it's
because he's got like a he just like me for real type character.
Oh, but he's a communist.
Not really.
Oh, well, I think in the movie, that's what I've heard, is that they paid him.
He banged a communist.
He banged a communist.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So maybe I got my things twisted a little bit. I just thought that Oppenheimer was a communist.
I don't consider him.
Okay.
One.
Well, that's fair enough.
Social Democrat at best. Which to me is just a liberal, so.
Fair enough. Well, that's Splash. I think it won the Oscar for Best Water, so that's pretty cool.
Pretty good. It's a prestigious award.
I think so. No one's won it since then, which is a little odd. Except for this next movie, which won Best Picture a couple years ago. And by a couple, I mean like 7 or 8.
Is it that long ago already?
Yeah, it's The Shape of Water. I think it came out in 2017. I should probably look that up before saying
2017. That's 7 years ago.
Yeah, that was. Oh, no.
I don't like this.
Hey, I don't either. Yeah, I was like, I saw Splash because I was home this weekend and my mom was like, let's watch Splash. I saw it when I was a kid and I remember it being really good. And then I think everybody, me and my mom and my dad, who all watched it, were very disappointed. Well, I wasn't disappointed. I had no expectations going in. But everyone was like, oh, that wasn't as good as I thought it was. And then I was like, well, what possible theme could I make with this? But then I remembered that The Shape of Water exists, and I haven't seen that yet. So I watched it today, and it's very good. It's not my favorite Guillermo del Toro by any means, but it's pretty good. Better than I thought it was going to be. Like, I knew it won Best Picture, blah, blah, you know. Nomadland won Best Picture, and I hate that movie. So, not always the best judge of things. But, you know, I had my man Doug Jones in it, who Guillermo always convinces to wear creature makeup. And I'm like, okay, that's epic. It has Sally Hawkins as the lead, who's the mom in Paddington. So, you know, there's quality there. You got Octavia Spencer, who's just a joy in everything that she's in. And Michael Shannon, who's like the evilest man. Other than like Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe is like the most evil man. And then Michael Shannon is like diet Willem Dafoe. I don't know. He was General Zod in Man of Steel. And he was in Knives Out. That might be. Oh, he's in Kangaroo Jack too. That's pretty sick. I don't remember him being in Kangaroo Jack, but it's been a while since I've seen it. But yeah, this movie, it has a great premise, I guess, because Sally Hawkins is a mute janitor at an underground government facility. So, pretty cool. She signs the whole time, which I felt very seen because I'm deaf, which I thought she was deaf, but it turns out she's just mute because I guess when she was a baby, someone like cut out her vocal cords and then dropped her off at an orphanage. This is like brought up in one line and never brought up again, which is like, that's the most crazy backstory. I feel like we should probably elaborate on that, but I guess it's more important to get multiple love scenes between her and the fish man. But she's in this underground government facility. Michael Shannon is like a high up U.S. government type who has captured this fish man, in South America, where those primitive tribal people worshipped him as a god. And I'm not just saying that for me, I'm saying because that's what the characters in the movie say. And they're like, we need to do experiments on them because apparently he has healing properties, which is what I was saying about Splash, where I'm like, why are they dissecting the mermaid that is just a fish? People don't do that to salmon. I don't think, you know, it's just we eat it. I don't think anyone's going to eat mermaid because it's half lady. But, you know, if if we can harness this fish's ability to heal people, and also this is like Cold War era US, so it's like, oh, like even like more specific, it's like space race era US, and they're like, hey, this fish has like a breathing apparatus for being in water and being on land. And if we can harness that technology, then we can send a man to the moon before those damn Ruskies do. Which I guess. I don't know if the problem with landing on the moon was breathing. I mean, probably. That was part of it. But
one
I think
the many issues.
I would think that the main issue would be, how do we get a rocket to shoot up into the sky and land on something that is, you know, thousands of miles away. But I guess it's more important that we dissect this fish. JFK said so. I guess. I don't know. They don't really bring up who the president is. Ever. So, yeah, they get this fish man, and he's super cool and hot. He is ripped. I guess that's important. And Sally Hawkins is like, oh, this fish man sees me for me, because, you know, the fish man isn't, like, accustomed to our culture to know that, like, what I'm missing. He just sees me as a full and honest person, because he doesn't know that people are supposed to talk, because he's a fish. And I buy it, you know, that makes sense. I get that this is more like an allegory, because like everybody on like the good side of this movie all have something that the society of Cold War America would deem like a flaw. So like she's mute and her like neighbor friend is gay. And Octavia Spencer is black, and like there's a lot of like civil rights like era stuff like on the news, so there's like actively like cops shooting like black protesters with fire hoses and stuff. And then they have this man on the inside who's like a Russian spy, but he's a good guy because he's a scientist and he's doing this for science. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. So everybody in this movie that's on the good side is a flaw in 1960s America, in that society, I guess. Which is interesting. It's a group of people that, you know, may not have anything in common today, but in that time, they were all discriminated against for one reason or another. I guess the Russian guy wasn't really discriminated against because he was undercover, but, you know what I'm saying. He's a communist, a filthy, rotten communist, kill them all, Joe McCarthy, whatnot.
Correct.
And I was like, that's a great little thing. It's a ragtag group of people, and I like that. And then I got really worried about halfway in, where, you know, they break the fish person out of the government facility. They have him just staying in the mute girl's bathtub. And then, like, it is discovered that, like, he can heal people because he scratches the gay neighbor guy and he heals it. And not only that, but he, like, touches his head. And this gay neighbor guy is, like, in his late 50s. Like, I don't know. Middle-aged, I guess. And he's a little bald on top. And he touches his bald spot, and it fills in with hair. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. Like, baldness is not, like, a medical, you know, it's not, like, a wound or anything. Like, why is that healing? And then I got really worried. And I'm like, oh, no, he's going to fix her vocal cords so that she can talk. And I'm like, that is a terrible, terrible message to instill in an audience. And that, hey, you know, they see, you know, this person, they see me for me. It's a really great relationship where I don't feel like I have these, like, things that are holding me back like I do when talking to anyone else or communicating with anyone else because you can't talk. And it's like, oh, well, then change yourself, and then you'll be perfect. And I'm like, no, don't do it. Guillermo, don't do it. If you make her talk, I'm going to be pissed, because the message of the movie should not be change yourself so that you're perfect. It should be, you know, accept your, I guess, quote unquote flaws as like cool things about yourself. And this is coming from someone who has a bunch of disabilities. So like, I'm like, no, don't do that. Don't have her change. Cause that's like my big problem with Toy Story 4. In the end of that movie, which I don't remember how, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how, this is probably not fresh on anyone else's mind, but in Toy Story 4, the end of that movie, there's that doll that's in the like antique store, and she's like, I need a new vocal box because nobody loves me because my vocal box is broken, and if only I was different, then people would love me. And because I guess the antique shop owner has a young daughter, and she doesn't want to play with her because her voice box is broken. So Woody gives her a voice box, and then the granddaughter still doesn't want to play with her. And that leaves her even more depressed. And it isn't until that she meets, there's a lost girl that's at the fair that's next door. And then she does her voice box like, oh, I love her because her voice box is working. And it's like, well, that's the message is, it isn't that, you know, the lost girl found this doll, and even though she has a lost voice box, she still loves her because she's lost and she needs something right now. It's because she has this voice box, because she's changed herself, that she is loved. And it's like, well, that's not a good message, especially to kids. And I was worried that this movie was going to fall into the same pitfall, but it doesn't. She doesn't talk for the whole movie. There's a weird scene, like, in the last 10 minutes, where it, like, cuts to, like, a black and white, like a 50s era musical type thing. What's their names? Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, like that era of big song and dance musicals where she's singing a song to the fish man and proclaiming her love and how much she loves him. But then it cuts back to reality. She isn't really doing that. So I was like, oh no, is this happening? Is she like, did he heal her voice box through magic sex or something? And then, and now she can sing this song to him? But no, it's all fake, and she's like signing the words to him because she's been teaching him sign language. So blah 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 stuff happens, but this movie has the same ending as Splash, which I think is hilarious because they're at the dock and the military are right on their tails, and but this time it is the fish isn't like, hey, come with me, I can make you breathe underwater, but you can't see your gay neighbor friend anymore. It's like, because Michael Shannon is the big bad guy, and he just shoots the fish guy twice and then shoots the mute lady once, which is pretty brutal. Like, I didn't see that coming, but the fish man heals himself because obviously, and then he grabs the lady's body and jumps into the water and then heals her once they're in the water. And then it is implied that they swam around in the coral reef in the Hudson. This movie doesn't take place in New York City. I think it takes place in Baltimore. And they just swim around and for happily ever after. This movie is way more artsy than Splash. But I thought it was pretty good. I was really, really nervous, but I think it's fine. She doesn't talk. She doesn't ever talk. I do still kind of think it's weird that the guy's bald spot fills in, because I'm like, that, nothing medically is wrong with him, that's just his genetics. So, that might imply that the fish can heal genetic disorders, which would be weird and interesting, where it's like, what if the fish saw, like, someone that can't process, like, gluten, and then just touched their belly or something, and then that cures that? Would that work? Guillermo, please let me know in the comments down below if the fish can cure genetic disorders or not. I would assume yes, but That also seems like a really weird and random power to give your fish monster. I mean, just like healing physical wounds would have been fine. It was just a weird choice. It was like, oh, also my bald spot filled in. And it's like, he only ever heals like physical wounds before, since, and after that. It's just like this one detail that is kind of throwing me for a loop. And maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe I should just let it go. And I'm fixated on this for no reason. But, and maybe it's because I've been consuming too much science fiction. And this stuff is usually thought out there in like heady, smart science fiction. So, I don't know. Sorry if I'm missing the point of the movie. I think I got it, but it's just like, okay. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Splash, not good. I don't know. I don't know. I don't remember what came out in 2017. If anything was better than this, probably. Just because I wasn't super hot on it. I thought it was pretty good, but nothing crazy. So, yeah, check it out. If you're a fan of Guillermo del Toro, I mean, I think it's a good one, so see it. But if you haven't seen, like, Pan's Labyrinth, I wouldn't jump to see this one. Or even, like, Pinocchio, which I think is perfect. You know, see that one before you see this. Or even like, Devil's Backbone, I think was pretty good. So, I don't know. I think that's pretty much it for me. Just those two hit films. They kind of broke my brain. Maybe next week will be less complicated. I don't know. But I think I'm going to throw it on over to Babby for music.
Man. Couple things this week. Not a lot. I don't even think I have news for anything.
What?
I think it's just here. I think I talked about a lot of that last week.
Yeah. But
there are still stuff coming this month. Things we will be reacting to.
What?
So stay tuned for that.
I didn't know about this.
Well, you do now. We can start with Big Mike.
Mike?
He released a new record. I think the day after the podcast last week. So we got podcast time.
Oh, sweet.
But it's fine. It's Pinball with Tony Seltzer, which is so fun. Tony
Seltzer.
It's a great name. Yeah, it's 21 minutes, 11 tracks, pretty much what you'd expect from a Mike record in terms of track length and stuff. But this one's really good. It's not my favorite, but at the same time, it's fun. I've listened to like 2.5 Mike records now. Looking to do even more. This one went into a trap direction, which was very unexpected. And even more unexpected is that he does it really well. His vocal tone and inflection works really well with trap, but at the same time works really well with what he usually does with more sample heavy loops. He's still got a great energy in these things. The hooks are actually pretty good. On God with Earl Sweatshirt is fantastic. Yeah, it's a really fun listen. It's nice and short too. Yeah, I don't know if I have a whole lot to say about it in general, but it is a very solid record. Nothing that's going to like top my year end list or anything, but it's a fun listen, especially with the weather being nicer. It's like, you just want to jam something that's, you know, bass heavy. Yeah, very solid, some good features on it as well. Very unexpected direction with the kind of trap sound, but I think it pays off well for him. And I just love that Tony Seltzer is a name and that Vinny Fanta is a name.
I do like that.
It's just so fun. Yeah, good record. Check it out. We just did Mike on the channel, so
we did
check that out too. But yeah, so that happened. That was last Wednesday. I don't know. I'm not used to things releasing a whole week before I talk about them. I think we had one album that I listened to this week. I know Ariana Grande released an album.
What?
haven't listened to it. I'm sorry. I think I've only heard one Ariana Grande album. Oh yeah, Thank You Next. Actually, no, I heard Positions too. They were both okay. Anyways, okay. I'm not talking about Ariana Grande. We'll talk about More Mother. New album is out. The Great Bailout. This is... how do I talk about this? This is like less of an album full of music and more of like a... I don't know. Just an overall experience. It's very off-putting. It's one of those albums where I listen to it and I'm like, this is fantastic. But I won't listen to any of these songs without listening to the whole record. And I won't listen to the whole record unless I'm like in a really specific mood. So, but yeah, it is very good. I talked about the two singles, Guilty and All the Money. Those are the ones that start the record. Very like spoken poetry over kind of free jazz ambient, a little bit of glitch going on. It's very unsettling, but she does such a good job with her delivery. She's just incredible with the spoken word stuff. A lot of the themes, Guilty is just like going through like all of the kind of systematic, economic, physical mistreatment of the third world, and kind of like casting this guilty hex on all of the colonizers and the oppressors in this really haunting but beautiful track. And then All the Money goes through a whole bunch of random like art exhibits and other things in Britain and France, and asks how they were built and where they got the money from. Again, haunting, fantastic. There's some really nice background vocals on this track as well. Then we got God Save the Queen. Again, it's very like England and Western Europe focused, which I think is really cool. God Save the Queen is really cool. There's this weird ambient kind of jazz, but under like some really like crisp, kind of like SoundCloud trap drums and 808s. It's really interesting. That one's fantastic as well. I think Compensated Emancipation is next. This track is terrifying. It's such an unsettling listen. It's such a hard album to talk about. This feels like walking like through an art exhibit in a museum, and one that's like not supposed to be like a, supposed to be like a little bit more of an off-putting experience. This whole record is just extremely uncomfortable, but in a way that like you want more. And there's just like these circling background vocals and everything. It just kind of fills the mix. It gets really claustrophobic. And it really does. It's just such a, you're on the edge of your seat with these once we get in the middle of the album here. And it pays off really well. It's weird because I do rate this album pretty highly, but it's like one that I will not return to very much. But as a piece of art, it is really great. But that one's fantastic as well. I think Death by Longitude. Yeah. Noise, glitch, craziness. Again, same kind of themes that we've been touching on. A lot of the themes on the record deal with the economic side of colonization and that kind of stuff. So how Europe was built and why Europe is wealthy and the third world isn't. And all these kind of concepts surrounding that, which I think is really fantastic. And I love how much she digs into like art museums and like how bourgeois art became when really most of it is kind of stolen, and artifacts and even the crown for like monarchies and stuff like that. So taking an in-depth look at that was really, really, really fantastic. It's hard to remember what all the tracks sound like. It is just a whirlwind of an experience. It feels like watching that one episode of Twin Peaks in season 3, the nuclear bomb episode. It is just like, it's gorgeous, it's terrifying, it's a lot, but it's also like, I don't know, it's a really, really great experience. So check it out if you're at all interested. It is definitely the most unique album you'll hear this year. And one that I do rate pretty highly. I think this is like the third best album to come out this year. But I actually, I'm going to count it as second. I have this Caroline Polachek Deluxe really high up, but I feel like I can't count that technically. So this is second.
That's fair.
But yeah, it's fantastic. So check it out if you're all interested in any of that weird stuff, any of like the more dark ambient side of music. Definitely check it out. It is really great. I cannot sing the praises high enough for this thing. I do need to give it some more listens whenever I'm back in the mood for this to really see how this thing kind of holds up. But it is really, really, really well made. I had a good feeling about it when I heard Guilty because I'm like, that song is just really fantastic. So check it out. Yeah, more accustomed to watching a film than listening to music. But if you're into that, check it out. And then the only other thing I did this week is the complete opposite in every single way. I listened to Talk Talk's The Color of Spring.
Oh.
I have not listened to this one yet. But Talk Talk is on the list for the videos on the main channel. So we'll probably be doing Talk Talk eventually whenever the wheel, picks it. But I wanted to kind of re-listen to some of them and then dig into The Color of Spring because this was kind of the record before the two classics that everybody knows them for. So it kind of blends the birth of post-rock with art rock with 80s pop, and it turns out really well. It's definitely more grounded, and there's more of a backbone here than on Spirit of Eating and Laughingstock. And it definitely, it sounds like 80s pop, but in the best way possible. The progressions here and the instrumentation is really great. I get some hints of like Talking Heads in here a little bit. But you also get like not mainstream 80s pop, but that kind of like glamorous over the top vocal type performance, comes through here too. It's really, really great. I love how it kind of blends this, but you do get like a little bit of that post rock popping through before it was actually a thing. Like they really do take their time with 8 songs in 45 minutes. But yeah, this record is really fantastic. So, yeah, I don't know if I don't think we'll do The Color of Spring because I know you're not huge on 80s pop. Mm-hmm. I feel like there are definitely some parts of this record where you'll be like, that's too much.
Sure.
I think it ages pretty well, and it's kind of like a novelty in a way, but it works. But I also listen to Spirit of Eden and Laughingstock again because those are two of like my favorite albums ever, and I can't decide which one is better or which one I want to show on the channel, because they are both like incredible. But I think you'll enjoy both of those a lot.
Sweet.
It's always interesting to like see the birth of a genre, and especially the album that kind of bridged it before that birth of a genre. So, yeah, Talk Talk is fantastic. Definitely, my appreciation for them grows every time I hear a record of theirs. They still have two more from 84 and 82. I might listen to those. But I feel like these last three in their catalog were really like the height of what they were doing. But yeah, I'm excited to talk about them on the channel. It's going to be, again, an interesting reaction because there's not going to be too much to say, but it's just going to be like, I need to figure out a way for us to listen to like longer instrumental sections and like still get entertaining video footage out of, because these records do deserve, you know, a video on them. It's just, how do we do that? But yeah, really fantastic. Talk Talk is one of my faves, but yeah, that's all I did this week. It was kind of a slow week. I know later this month, there's a lot of stuff coming. So I think this week there's not really much. I think Casey Musgraves comes out. We'll see.
I think that is true.
How that's feeling. We might do a reaction to that eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think everything else is like the week after, and then I got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about after that. So.
Yeah, because we got Adrian Lenker and Sir coming out the week after.
And I think that Luca album comes out as well. And I'm going to be very interested in that. When does this come out? 29th, actually. Okay, so that's the end of the month.
Okay.
So, but I definitely have eyes on that because I think that's going to be a banger of a hip hop record this year. I think Beyonce just announced she's releasing an album. Oh, at the end of this month. Okay. Cowboy Carter. I think she's just doing a full country record.
Oh, that could be interesting.
I think she's released like two singles that were country this year. And then I think there was a whole thing about the country music stations not wanting to put her on the radio because they claimed it wasn't country when it's literally country songs. But that's
didn't we go over this with Lil Nas X?
Yes, it happens every time.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that's it.
All right. Well, we won't be reacting to Beyonce.
No. We would get murdered.
Yeah, I feel like there's a couple artists that are like on our no-fly lists. It's like BTS or Beyonce or even Ariana Grande. I feel like those are
probably... I do want to do a Butterfly Redux reaction eventually.
I don't want to do that. We still get comments.
I know. That record is great, though. It just took a long time to warm up on me.
I would be down with doing The Emancipation of Mimi.
That's true. We should probably just do a different record.
That is on my list. I probably won't pick it anytime soon because I'm scared. But
yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah. So, yeah, won't be reacting to Beyonce.
Yeah, we got New Order this week, though. So, all you nerds out there.
Oh, someone's
got a hot one coming in next week.
Well, good. Yeah, we got a lot of good stuff coming up.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to. I don't know which one we're going to react to first, Sir Adrian Lanker.
We'll spin a wheel.
We could. We could spin a wheel. Flip a coin. But yeah, what is next week? It's that one album that you picked that was Semi Yikes, and I don't remember New what Order. It was. Oh, that was New Order.
Power, Corruption, and Lies.
Okay. I thought you meant there was a new New Order album coming.
No.
Okay.
I think they're done.
Okay. Interesting.
I'd imagine so, at least. I don't know. I have no idea, actually.
I don't know.
They were popular. Like, Joy Division, like, ended in, like, 1980, and New Order got birthed out of that. So I'd imagine at this point they're pretty much done.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll see. It looks like they're releasing, like, definitive versions of their albums, but...
That's when you know it's over.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But aside from that, I think that's pretty much it for this week's podcast. I don't think we have anything for next week for sure, other than we might bring up Kacey Musgraves, whether or not we're going to do a reaction on it. Depends on how the reception is. We don't want another star-crossed on our hands. So we'll wait.
I mean, we can react to an album that's not great, but I feel like we have a lot that we want to get to.
Yeah, it's just like, do we do that before Sir? We probably wouldn't even do that before Sir or Adrian Lanker. Yeah. But it's just like, would we do it?
I think Kacey Musgraves is like the low, the bottom of the new release list for
me. Yeah, that one would probably be the third one. But it's like, do we move on after Adrian Lanker or Sir to go on to our wheel, or do we do hit that Kacey Musgraves record before we stop doing new releases? I think that's what it's going to come down to.
I guess we'll figure that out.
We'll figure it out, and we'll see how people feel about that album. If it's one that is dead on arrival and no one cares, then probably not a big deal if we make a video about it or not.
Exactly.
But I guess we'll see. That's it. Bye-bye.